God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with a light from above. From the mountains to the prairies to the oceans wide with foam. God bless America, my home, sweet home. God bless America, my home, sweet home.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome Dr. Rob Havers, president of the George C. Marshall Foundation.
Ladies and gentlemen, a very good morning to you. Let's have one more round of applause for D.C., Washington. Please, please be seated. Ladies and gentlemen, it is a very great honor for me to welcome such a distinguished audience and to be part of the sixth presentation of the Good Pastor Award to somebody who is so truly deserving of the recognition he is about to receive, General Mark Milley, Chief of Staff of the United States Army. General Milley, like General Andrew Goodpaster, is a Princeton graduate. He received his commission through the Princeton ROTC program in 1980 and has served the United States Army for nearly 37 years, including the last two as Chief of Staff at a time when the country needs his leadership. Today may be similar in many respects to that time for George C. Marshall, who began 6 years as Army Chief of Staff as World War II began in Europe in 1939. Speaking to the graduating class at West Point following that war, General Marshall told them that military leadership is not merely a matter of tactics and of strategy, not merely a matter of courage. It involves a great many factors, of which character and of which loyalty are probably the most important. Following lunch today, we will hear from General Milley, whose service can be distinguished in part by his exemplary character and integrity. Even though General Marshall, with Allied victory in hand, retired from a career in the Army that lasted nearly 44 years, General Marshall still had yet more work to do. To restore the spirit and the economies of Western Europe, the Secretary of State through the Marshall Plan. Later, as President of the American Red Cross, a position he felt privileged to hold as a way of honoring the many soldiers, sailors, and airmen who had helped the Allies prevail. Finally, as Secretary of Defense, General Marshall once again had to rebuild a fighting force drawn down after World War II, but in anticipation of yet another war in Korea. In all, General Marshall served this nation and indeed the world for more than 50 years. During that period, he had a role, and often a central role, in the most major events of the first half of the 20th century. Our primary mission at the George C. Marshall Foundation is to share this remarkable legacy and return George C. Marshall to the forefront of public consciousness where he so rightly deserves to be. We accomplish this mission through our extraordinary library and archives in Lexington, Virginia, open daily to researchers, scholars, students of world history from the first half of the 20th century. And at the George C. Marshall Museum, located on the post at the Virginia Military Institute, where we have resided for more than 50 years. We operate in Lexington, Virginia, as an independent, non-profit organization dedicated to keeping alive the legacy of General Marshall. Our Marshall Legacy series represents a popular interpretation of Marshall's outstanding record of leadership. You can read all about what we do and how we do it in our publications that are on your chairs. I hope you will take them with you and share them with friends. General Marshall loved the Army, yet often, like many capable and ambitious leaders, he often felt frustrated by the slow turn of its machinery. After 37 years in uniform, when most would have called it a career, he finally rose to that position as Chief of Staff, beginning that unparalleled and extraordinary period during the next 12 years as national and international leader. The breadth of General Marshall's accomplishments are staggering. If I were to sum it up, I would say that General Marshall is without peer, except perhaps for General George Washington, because Marshall, like Washington, won the war and also won the peace that followed it. Ladies and gentlemen, please enjoy your lunch. Enjoy that little light lunch, and that you will stay with us for the rest of the program. We are very honored indeed to have so many friends, individual and corporate, foreign and domestic, with us today. A special thanks to L3 Technologies and to GE for their leadership and support of this event. This occasion is special for another reason. The attendance of so many distinguished guests, including, but not limited to, ambassadors and other officials from the embassies of NATO member countries. General Goodpaster was NATO's supreme allied commander, as you all know. The Andrew J. Goodpaster Award honors the life and the service of General Goodpaster, a longtime trustee and chairman of the Marshall Foundation Board, who was a champion of the Marshall legacy, an American hero in his own right, and an extraordinary public servant. This award is presented annually to American business leaders, politicians, military leaders who have served this nation in exemplary ways, who, like General Goodpaster, have exhibited great courage, selfless service, patriotism, and leadership in their lives and in their careers. I'm honored to help tell the story today of why General Milley is so deserving of this honor. For General Milley is that same type of leader. Tireless, fearless, selfless. He has been determined in his own pursuit of excellence during a long and distinguished career in the Army that put him in a similar position as that of General Marshall many years ago. General Milley assumed duty as the 39th Chief of Staff of the Army in August 2015, after most recently serving as the commander of U.S. Army Forces Command at Fort Bragg in North Carolina. He has had multiple command and staff positions in 8 divisions and special forces across 37 years. He has served in command and leadership positions from the platoon and the operational detachment alpha level through Corps and Army Command, including the 82nd Airborne Division, the 5th Special Forces Group, the 7th Infantry Division, the 10th Mountain Division, the 2nd Infantry Division in Korea, the Joint Readiness Center, the 25th Infantry Division, the 101st Airborne Air Assault Division, thank you, and the 1st Cavalry Division and 3rd Infantry Division in Baghdad, Iraq, quite the list. While serving as the commanding general of 3 Corps and Fort Hood, he deployed as the commanding general, International Security Assistance Force, Joint Command, and deputy commanding general, U.S. Forces Afghanistan. Additionally, he served on the operations staff of the Joint Staff and as a military assistant to the Secretary of Defense. Now, one person who works hand in hand with the chief is Ryan McCarthy, Undersecretary of the Army. Ryan McCarthy, serving as Undersecretary of the Army from August through November, acting Secretary rather, through November 2017, unanimously confirmed by the U.S. Senate and appointed as the 33rd Undersecretary of the Army in August also. Prior to his confirmation, he worked for Lockheed Martin Corporation in sequential vice president roles responsible for the sustainment, customer solutions, program integration of the F-35 Joint Strike Fighter program and the company's global security policy. Mr. McCarthy has served as the Special Assistant to the Secretary of Defense, Robert Gates, and as Special Assistant to the Undersecretary of Defense for Acquisition, Technology, and Logistics. He has also served as a professional staff member of the U.S. House of Representatives Committee on International Relations. Mr. McCarthy, a graduate of the Virginia Military Institute, served in the United States Army from 1997 to 2002 and was involved in combat operations in Afghanistan in support of Operation Enduring Freedom with the 75th Ranger Regiment, U.S. Special Forces Command. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome Undersecretary of the Army, Ryan McCarthy.
If I appear nervous, it's because Lieutenant General John Knapp, who was the superintendent at VMI, is here, and I've tried to avoid him for my 4 years as a cadet. But found my way into his office a couple times. Good to see you, General Knapp, in this capacity. As Undersecretary of the Army, I'm constantly with the Vice Chief of Staff of the Army, and I thought, get out of the building, not talking about budgets, and I get posted next to General Dick Cody, a legendary Vice Chief of Staff of the Army. So, now I know why they never let me leave the building. But it's great to be here. Thank you, Dr. Havers, for the kind introduction. Thank you to the Marshall Foundation for hosting these awards and shining a light on Americans in a variety of fields who model courage, selfless service, patriotism, and leadership in all of their lives and careers. As a VMI graduate, I'm humbled and honored to be participating in a Marshall Foundation event, supporting the legacy of General Goodpaster, who I had the privilege of hearing him speak when I was a cadet and was inspired to live by his example. To begin, I'd like to say that this award is every bit as much for Holly Ann Milley as it is for General Mark Milley. During his career, General Milley and his family have moved nearly 20 times, and he has served on 8 operational assignments outside of the United States, a reminder of the stress we put on military families and a testament to Holly Ann's strength and character. During an incredibly hard time for the military and military families, she raised 2 successful children, led family readiness groups from the company level to headquarters DA, touching the lives of thousands of soldiers and their families, all the while working as a cardiac nurse. So, Holly Ann, thank you for all you've done for our Army and all you continue to do. I'm personally honored to be here today because I've known General Milley for over a decade. Not once, but twice in my life, General Milley has been there to bring me onto a new team. In both cases, he went out of his way to support me, to endorse me, to help me, and, of course, the team, to be successful. So publicly, I want to thank him for that. Thanks, Chief. When I think about our time together, 4 of his qualities immediately come to mind as to why he's so deserving for this recognition. First, he's a gifted communicator. I'm not only talking about being one of the funniest people that I know. I'm talking about his courage and his candor to speak truth to power. His ability to clearly articulate what the Army can do and what it cannot do. He's equally unafraid to call out our strengths and our weaknesses. When he sees a problem, he says something, but he always brings a solution. To understand what I mean, go back and look at his testimony in April of 2016 to the Senate Armed Services Committee. The Army is and always will be a can-do organization. But during a period of fiscal austerity and little appetite for increased budgets, General Milley stood before the committee and made it clear that, quote, if we were mandated to go to a higher size, more soldiers, more in strength, and we didn't have the dollars, I personally think that would be disaster for both the nation and the Army. He spoke truth to power, the same way General Marshall did during his legendary tenure as the chief. That's directly related to the second quality. General Milley is a world-class problem solver with a gifted intellect. I saw that intellect on display when we both worked for Secretary Gates during one of the most controversial periods during our involvement in the Afghanistan and Iraq conflicts, the surge. Even as a junior military assistant, he was critical to explaining the complex orders process that supported the surge in Iraq. He provided the expert military advice that the senior official in the Department of Defense needed to understand the flow of troops, when units would be available to deploy, how they would flow in, when they would be operational. Pulling all this together is some level of math above calculus. But he understood it, and to my first point, he could clearly articulate it to the boss. Third, General Milley is a born leader and a loyal teammate. When I came on board as a part of Secretary Gates' transition team, General Milley was already in place as the SecDef's military assistant. Without hesitation, he went out of his way to ensure a smooth transition for me and the entire team. He's focused on the team's success above all, just as he was when he brought me on 4.5 months ago, and now with Dr. Esper as our Secretary of the Army. That's why I sometimes think of us as brothers in an Irish Catholic family. We may argue vigorously, or even fight about some things, mainly on phone calls late into the night. Again, Holly, sorry about that. But in the end, I value every word he says. We always reach consensus on how to move forward to the common end. And I value every one of those iterations, and they make me better for it. Above all, and my favorite quality, is his ironclad will. In our 16th year of sustained combat operations, faced with uncertainty of the Budget Control Act, in August, the Chief turned to General McConville and I and said, "We have to restructure the Army to keep pace with the information age." It was through his conviction that we launched the pursuit of the most ambitious restructuring of the Army since 1973. His will is what turns all the qualities I mentioned today into a formula for continued success for our Army and our nation. His will is what binds his ability to clearly communicate with candor, his gifted intellect as a problem solver, and his leadership and loyalty into a force for change. So, Chief, thank you for your 37-plus years of service. You truly embody the characteristics of General Goodpaster. But on a personal level, thank you for all you've done for me. I trust you with my life, my family, all that I have. Big Navy.
Mr. Undersecretary, thank you very much for those warm remarks. Another person who knows General Milley very well is General Richard Cody. General Cody was the 31st Vice Chief of Staff of the United States Army and is the current Corporate Senior Vice President for Washington Operations for L3 Technologies. He has been described as the soldier's soldier. His retirement as Vice Chief in 2008 culminated a 36-year career in the Army, during which he served tours with the 101st Airborne Division Air Assault as Commanding General, and as Commander 1st Battalion, the 101st Aviation Regiment Attack during Operation Desert Storm. During this career, General Cody served in 6 of the Army's combat divisions. He also commanded the 4th Infantry Division Mechanized, E Company, the 24th Aviation Battalion, B Company, the 229th Attack Helicopter Battalion, 1st Battalion, the 101st Aviation Regiment, 4th Brigade, the 1st Cavalry Division, and the 160th Special Operations Aviation Regiment. General Cody is a master aviator with more than 5,000 hours of flight time and is a member of the Army Aviation Hall of Fame. He's devoted considerable time to the leadership of non-profit Homes for Our Troops, the Intrepid Fallen Heroes Fund, and we are most fortunate indeed to include him as a member of the Board of Trustees of the George C. Marshall Foundation. Ladies and gentlemen, please help me welcome General Dick Cody.
I'm going to have you at my eulogy, Dr. Havers. My mother would believe all that, but my mother-in-law certainly not. Well, listen, thanks, everybody, for being here. It's a great honor for me to talk about our 39th Chief of Staff of the Army, my good friend, General Mark Milley. First off, Secretary McCarthy, I thought that was a great characterization of Mark Milley. Every word that the Secretary said, you can bet that's Mark Milley every day. You need to know a couple things about him. He was a hockey player at Princeton. There he learned to skate hard and fast, and he never shied away from putting an opponent into the wall, which is important because these skills have served him well so far in the Pentagon. He's been married to his wife, Holly Ann, of over 32 years. And as you know, Holly Ann's a registered nurse. But more importantly, after caring for Mark all these years, and she's a cardiac nurse, and so she constantly makes sure his heart's working. She brought up both kids, and I'll talk about them in a minute, but she spends weekly visits up at Walter Reed very quietly, checking on our soldiers, and more importantly, the families, and making sure they're getting the great care. So, Holly Ann, thanks for everything you've done over your career. Their daughter, Mary, who speaks Chinese, and she's now getting her degree at the University of North Carolina, her graduate degree, and their son, Peter, who's in the oil business, is getting his graduate degree at Texas Christian University. This is a great Army family, and they make all of us proud, and they're certainly a role model for all Army families. I know Mark Milley is a great soldier. He's a devoted husband and father, and I believe he is one of our nation's finest combat leaders of the 21st century. This is a very, very dangerous world we live in, very reminiscent of the chaotic and dangerous world that General Marshall faced in the late 1930s and certainly General Goodpaster in the 50s, 60s, and 70s. And today our nation needs leaders who have the experience, the strategic vision, the guts, and the moral courage to deal with the plethora of challenges our nation face and our soldiers face. And I have to tell you that Mark Milley is that type of leader. He's tough, but he's a caring leader. His leadership style was forged over 30-plus years of successive overseas deployments from lieutenant to general across our global hotspots, from the Sinai in Egypt, Panama, Colombia, Haiti, Bosnia-Herzegovina, Iraq, Afghanistan, and Somalia. Mark Milley, more than any other chief of staff we've had in modern history, has seen and fully understands the complex threats that our soldiers face today on the battlefield and what our future soldiers will face on the future battlefield of tomorrow. I've known Mark Milley for over 20 years. He is a man of courage. His moral compass always points true north, and it never wavers. He does speak truth to power, but more importantly, he never accepts a half-truth when the whole truth can be won. He has no ego, and like General Marshall and General Goodpaster, he is the model for all of us of selfless service to our nation. And so I'm very, very proud the George C. Marshall Foundation Chief is honoring you today. This is well-deserved, hard-earned, long overdue. And thanks for being our chief.
General Cody, thank you very much for your insights and your comments and your personal commitment and generosity and service to our veterans. I would ask Mr. Adams, Chairman of the Marshall Foundation Board, on stage to present the Andrew J. Goodpaster Award for 2017. Mr. Adams.
Thank you. Appreciate it, Rob. Thank you, Rob. And now it is my pleasure to invite General Mark Milley to join me on stage for the presentation of the award. General Milley.
Sure.
Thank you. We are here today to honor General Mark Milley for his service to the nation and to the world. General Milley, in recognition of your selfless service to our country, as Army Chief of Staff, and for your many years of distinguished leadership in the United States Army, and for an exemplary life and career that embody courage, selflessness, patriotism, and dedication to leadership, It is my honor to present you with the Andrew J. Goodpaster Award for 2017.
Thanks, sir.
I am from Boston. I am Irish. I kiss the Blarney Stone, but right now I don't know what to say. So, and after listening to Secretary McCarthy and General Cody, I'm pretty humbled right this second. So, I won't last for long. Awards are always nice and they're humbling, but we've got serious work on our hands as a nation. Right now, and I'm sensitive to your time. We all got to get back at the grindstone. But Dr. Havers and Jay, thanks so much for doing this. I appreciate it, and I'm doubly humbled because in this room there's some pretty amazing names in here. Jay Adams, you might recall that name from American history, a descendant of some of our founders. We've got General Retired McNair in here. Those in the Army may remember a guy named Leslie McNair, commander of Ground Forces Command in World War II, killed by friendly fire during Operation Cobra while he was inspecting the frontline trace. And also we have the grandson of General George C. Marshall here, Jim Wynn, who graduated from Princeton, class of 1964, was in ROTC and served in the artillery during the Vietnam era. And yes, Halvey, he's an artillery officer. So you should feel happy about that. His grandmother was Catherine Marshall. Holly Ann and I live in Quarters 1, which is the same home that George Marshall lived in when he was chief. And there's a library there, and it's named after Catherine Marshall. And Catherine Marshall's first husband, Jim's biological grandfather, passed away at an early age. And General Marshall's first wife passed away tragically at an early age as well. And then George Marshall, General Marshall, had a very, very difficult time going through the grieving process until he met Catherine. And Catherine brought him through a very, very tough time. And we've named the library after Catherine in Quarters 1. And the reason for that is because we think that without Catherine, there would have been no George Marshall. And without George Marshall, we would not have won World War II. So I'm very, very humbled, Jim, to have you here. Susan Sullivan is here with her husband, Roger. And for those of you who don't know Susan, wonderful woman, and she is the daughter of General Andrew Goodpaster. Her sister passed away a few years ago, but so she's the sole surviving member of the Goodpaster family, and we want to just say thanks to her as well for being here and honoring us with your presence today. So I'm humbled. You know, the Adamses, the McNairs, the Marshalls, the Goodpasters, the Halversons, the Agolias, pretty quite a crowd here. But thanks so much for doing this, Doctor, and thanks, Jay, for doing this. And I want to especially thank two good and very, very long friends, General Cody, who I've known for many, many years. And I consider him an uncle, a big brother, a mentor, a teacher, a coach, as so many of us in uniform today do. And there's a lot of reasons, I suppose, luck and chance, why someone becomes Chief of Staff of the Army. But Dick Cody is personally one of those reasons. I wouldn't have made it past the rank of colonel without Dick Cody. And there were others involved, but he was one of the principals. So thank you, sir, for your years of service. And you may or may not realize it, but General Cody was the battalion commander of the attack battalion, the H-64 battalion, that punched a hole in Saddam's air defenses in the first Gulf War. And he opened up the hole for the United States Air Force and United States Naval Air Forces that went in there and smacked Saddam's army in the first Gulf War. He's a man of enormous courage. Not only was he in Delta Force and Special Operations Aviation, but he also commanded the great 101st Airborne Division as well as being our vice. So thank you, sir, for your kind words. And another longtime friend, of course, is Ryan McCarthy, our Undersecretary of the Army. And he's doing enormously great things for our Army today. This is a guy, as was mentioned, he barely graduated VMI. He is the living embodiment of 2-0 and go. As the former superintendent can testify to. I don't know how a kid from Chicago ends up at VMI anyway, but somehow it happened. But a great American. This is a guy who volunteered, as soon as he graduates, to join the Ranger Regiment, commissioned as an infantry officer, goes in the Ranger Regiment, one of the very first guys into Afghanistan shortly after 9/11. And he's got a tremendous amount of experience in the corporate world. He's got time up on the Hill. He's got tremendous experience in OSD. And we as an Army could not be more blessed than to have him as our Undersecretary of the Army. So thank you all for your words, your kind words, your friendship over the years. General Marshall was an incredible person. And for me to stand here and receive an award from the Marshall Foundation and then to have that award in the name of General Goodpaster, I mean, look at it. I've liked myself, I guess, for 59 years, going on 60 now, right? But I can't hold a candlestick to either one of those guys. Those were amazing people. You think about General Marshall, just a poor kid, son of a coal miner from Uniontown, PA, and the things he did are just beyond the pale of imagination by us in this room. Here's a guy who took an army of a couple hundred thousand in 1939. He becomes the chief of staff of the Army. I've got a steel globe in my office, which was the globe that was in his office at the time in 1939. He takes over on the 1st of September, right as the Nazis invade Poland. He draws a red circle around Germany, and he has Eisenhower, his chief planner, standing there, and he says, Ike, the center of gravity of the war will be Germany, and that's what we got to focus all our efforts on. And that was on the 1st of September, 1939, the day he took over as chief of staff of the Army. And then he raised an army to 8 million, created 89 divisions, and he fought and defeated Nazi Germany, Imperial Japan, Fascist Italy, and all of their associated allies in 9 theaters of war simultaneously. And he did it in 36 months. Think about that. Think about what George C. Marshall did. It's off the charts. And then, of course, he secured the peace. Later, as the Secretary of State, he comes up with the Marshall Plan. He reinvigorates the politics, the stability, the economy of Europe. And the Europe today that you see, and the peace and stability, 7 decades of peace and stability in Europe. First time in 2,000 consecutive years there has not been a major land war on the European continent. That's due to George C. Marshall. Just a phenomenal individual. And for me to be standing here behind a microphone, be given an award by the Marshall Foundation is incredibly humbling, and I can't say thank you enough. And then you think about General Goodpaster, who another kid who goes to West Point because thought the education was free, wanted to get out of a failing farming community up in Illinois at the time during the Great Depression. Gets commissioned as an engineer and commands an engineer battalion in World War II, fights across Europe. And then later, as we all know, he rises to very high levels as the Supreme Allied Command of Europe. But what epitomizes the servant leader of General Goodpaster is the fact that out of retirement at 62 years old, you call him up and say, hey, Andrew, do you mind coming on back? And he says, sure. And do you mind getting demoted when you do it and go from 4 stars to 3 stars? And he said, not a problem. He said, the stars never mattered anyway. It's all about the service. And we brought him back, and he became the superintendent of the United States Military Academy at a very, very difficult time in the military academy's history, right following a big integrity cheating scandal up there. And he brought integrity back to the military academy, put him on the straight and narrow, and got him on the road to Damascus. So General Goodpaster is an amazing giant in American Army and American military history. So the two of them combined do more than humble me. But we live in a difficult time as well. Today is a period of time where we live in a world that was largely shaped by George Marshall and General Goodpaster. Now, the world we live in today is a result, direct result, of the Second World War. And the international order that was put in place in 1945, it was actually signed up at Bretton Woods in 1944 in New Hampshire at a hotel by 400 diplomats up there, and they designed the quote-unquote international world order that exists today. And I would argue, as General Cody alluded to, that history doesn't repeat itself. There is no exact repeat of history. But as Mark Twain said, history does rhyme. And today, we are seeing that international order under increasing stress all around the globe, particularly in Asia, Europe, and the Middle East. We know what's going on in the Middle East. It's been aflame for quite a long time. And it's a very, very dangerous road in the Middle East, and it's likely to be so for many years to come. There are considerable groups of people who want to destroy America, want to destroy Americans, want to overturn the order that exists in the Middle East, such as it is, and they want to destroy Europe. They're serious, and they're armed, and they're lethal, and they want to do death and destruction to everyone in this room. And it's our obligation as an army, our obligation as a military, and our obligation as a military to ensure that that never happens, and that we kill them, we destroy them, and we put them into the ash bin of history. And it's also perilous times in Europe, where we have a very revanchist Russia and been very aggressive against their former Warsaw Pact surrogates by aggressively attacking Georgia, going into the Crimea, and then what they're doing in the eastern Donbass, as well as outside of Europe, adventurism in Syria and elsewhere. They are clearly very aggressive in cyberspace and other areas, and they definitely attempt to influence a wide variety of elections in Europe and even here in our home country. Russia is an aggressive country and becoming more aggressive. China is probably a once-in-500-year phenomena, the greatest rise in power since the fall of the Roman Empire, or at least the rise of Western Europe. This is an economy that has been on the rise now since Deng Xiaoping in 1979, and we have witnessed in our lifetime the greatest shift in economic power that's happened in five centuries. Following that shift in economic power, we are now witnessing a very, very, very rapid rise in military capability and military power. And that is expanding quickly, geographically, with what's happening in the South China Seas, the One Belt, One Road. And we can't predict the future, but it's something to watch very closely because the rise of China is of very, very significant historical impact. But perhaps the most dangerous challenge that we, the United States, face today, it's very real, it's very serious, and it's very dangerous, and that is the development of intercontinental ballistic missiles with nuclear weapons attached by North Korea, aimed straight at the American people in our great cities. That is a threat that's real, it's here, and it's a clear and present danger. This president, this administration, and every previous administration, going back 20, 25 years, has committed to the American people to protect us, and they have committed that we will not allow North Korea to have that weapon. I don't know, neither you, no one in this room knows, what the future holds. We don't know the outcome, but the only thing I do know is that we will soon find out, one way or the other. The clock is running out, and it is near midnight on that particular situation. And this president is bound and determined to protect the American people, and we, its military, are honor-bound to do the same. And we will do whatever it takes to ensure the American people survive into the next century. So the world is perilous. But, you know, one of the things George Marshall said in 1939, he said, you know, or actually he said it later, but he said in 1939, I had all the time in the world, but I had no money. And then in 1941, I had all the money in the world, but I had no time. But what he didn't mention was that he had leaders. He had those Pattons, those Eisenhowers, those Hodges, those Gavins, sunk way down into the bowels of the organization called the United States Army. And when the crisis came, they came forward. They won the most significant war in human history. So he didn't have the money, and he may not have had the time, but he had the leaders. And we have the same today. I know that we have sergeants and captains and majors out there today who, like Marshall, are willing to speak truth to power, like good pastor, are competent and men of tremendous integrity and are servant leaders. I know that we have lieutenant colonel, battalion commanders, and brigade commanders that are wearing distinguished service crosses and silver stars who have seen the taste of combat up close. Many of them have purple hearts. I know that we have a general officer corps that's remarkably resilient and capable and competent, and they understand war. They understand how to fight at the tactical and the operational and the strategic level. So I don't know that we have enough money today, and I really don't know how much time we have left. But I do know that we have the leaders. The United States Army today has our share of good pastors and marshals. They may not have their name on the front page of the paper, and they're certainly not a household name in American history. But if the time comes and the winds of war break once again and we end up engaging in very large-scale conflict, you can take it to the bank that the United States Army has a lot of good pastors and marshals in their ranks today. So we are all very humbled, I think, to live in the shadow of those two great Americans, and I really do sincerely appreciate the honor today. So thank you very much.
General Milley, thank you very much for those insightful and engaging remarks. Again, our sincere congratulations to you, and thank you for accepting this award and for all that you do for this country, the United States Army. For those of you in the room that believe what the Marshall Foundation doing and does has value, I invite you to support us by becoming a member of the Foundation and also to join us next year for the 2018 Good Pastor Award Luncheon. General Milley, thank you. Again, all of you, thank you for coming. That concludes our luncheon. Thank you. Have a good year and join us again next year.